Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Coach Blevins, thanks for joining us on the Coach and Coordinator Podcast today.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thank you guys for having me.
Coach, you have a unique background in how you went from playing into being a coach. You kicked around the arena leagues for a little while. You've learned from that. Talk to our listeners a little bit about your progression into the coaching profession.
Well, I started coaching almost immediately after I was done the fall of my senior year. I wanted to play professionally, but I was injured and was recovering. And I started coaching that spring and was fortunate enough to get a contract to play arena ball the next spring with the Wyoming Cavalry. I got hurt and then actually got into coaching again and got into spring ball. And, you know, I was able to go then coach at Northern Colorado, previously been in my alma mater, Mesa State, or I guess Colorado Mesa now. So I went out there and was fortunate enough to receive another contract, tried it again, and guess what? I got hurt again. And I tried to recover one more time and just, it's a bridge too far, couldn't make it. So I ended up coaching the last arena team I had played for out in Oklahoma. So after that, I got back into coaching college full-time and have been doing that ever since.
Coach, as you've progressed into the coaching profession, what would you say are some key lessons you've learned that have had an impact on your development as a coach?
Coaching college is hard work, man. You got to be ready to put in the time. You know, every young coach is a student assistant or GA initially doesn't really understand the commitment of that. And, you know, I bounced around some different places that had very different hours, but at the same time, you know, the attention to detail and the commitment you have to have, you know, whether it's off season or in season. If it's off season, you got to be calling recruits. You know, my wife gets mad at me all the time because I'm always texting people, and she's like, "You're addicted to your phone," but like, babe, it's my job. If I don't do this, I'm going to get fired. So, you know, it's kind of the nature of the beast.
Coach, we talked a little bit as we started about your transition from playing arena ball into, you know, back onto the large field outdoors and the offense that you've developed. First of all, tell us a little bit about the offense you're running at Panhandle State.
Well, we're a multiple personnel type offense. We run a lot of West Coast / pro style type ideas. You know, usually with that type of offense, it's very detailed and very there's a lot of different concepts built into that. You know, just by the nature of the place we're at, we're moving to NAIA. You know, on campus, we've got to wear a bunch of different hats. Like yesterday, we spent all day either cleaning out the weight room, I mean, every piece of it, and then the other part, setting up, a wall of graduating seniors. So we wear a bunch of different hats. So we don't really have, some days, the time commitment to just get as detailed as you can get as those bigger schools. So what we wanted to do was condense concept-wise and run those out of a lot of different formations so that they all look different. We only had four drop-back concepts this spring, but we ran them out of every formation. So when concept A is in, we're going to run it out of every single formation we have the first day we do it and just say, guys, these are the rules. Number one is this. Number two is that. Number three is this. And whether you're a running back, tight end, or receiver, if you're number one, you're doing that. And if you're number two, you're doing this. So the rules don't change for anybody, but it allows us to get different guys running different routes in different situations, but still the progression is predictable to the quarterback.
So when you keep it simple like that, Coach, obviously you get creative with the formations you use. So how are you able to create a formation system that your players can, you know, correctly align? And I guess, is it heavy memorization, or are there some tricks you've had to installing your formation system as well?
We basically break up our formations by a tag system. So, for example, our 2x2 out of 11 personnel is right box. Okay, well, our inside receiver is a B. Okay, so box means B over with X. So B is on the weak side. Now, our 3x1 out of 11 personnel with our tight end and two receivers on the same side is boy. So B over with Y. So therefore, I mean, you just hear the word and, oh, well, I guess that makes sense, you know? And then you use for, you know, our 3x1 out of 11 personnel where our tight end is the nub and the three receivers are away from that, we call it tray. So we break that down for the guys as three away. Does that make sense? So
absolutely.
We're able to do that basically with all of our formations so that it's, you know, it's real simple for the guys and it's something that they can hear and logically think about instead of it being like Jaguar. I mean, you know, that relates to nothing, you know, and I hear Jaguar, where do I go? You know, I hear B over with X. Well, if I'm X, I'm always on the weak side. If I'm Z, I'm always on the strong side, and B, well, I'm going over there with X, you know? So it makes it real simple for our guys, something our guys pick up very easily.
That's definitely good teaching there, and being able to put in some learning cues within to the system to help players understand is good. That's something I had experienced as well. I went from using a formation system that I inherited, which was, you know, well over 50 memorized different formations that really didn't have a lot of logic to it. And then we broke it down into being able to use, you know, each guy maybe knowing a dozen words just for his alignments, because there was a lot of carryover between, you know, where all the other different guys aligned. So we eliminated a lot of that terminology and kept it simple. And what we found was with less words, we were able to create more. And that's where we were able to get creative, kind of ran a similar system to as you described. I think we had five passing concepts. But the tags and being able to move guys around into different systems really allows you a lot of flexibility. Coach, talk to us about the process for you as you look at your system and you carry your offense every week. How creative do you get in putting new things in versus building on maybe things you've had success with from the beginning of the season?
So basically, we had four basic dropback concepts, and I'm going to actually take a step back just to preface what I'm going to talk about is the whole teaching thing. We actually changed the way we call our plays this spring and did it all alliteration based. So for our smash concept, you know, it's going to be start with an S, you know, and that kind of thing. So we've basically had these base concepts that the guys can hear when they say them or they're signaled, and it allows them to A, recognize the concept immediately, so it's not real complicated for them, but B, we have these base concepts, and each week our concepts are set up so that we can tag another concept on the other half of it. So, for example, in 3x1, our concept side is technically the one receiver side, okay, and our protection is related to that, and out of 2x2, you know, we can rotate the concept both strong or weak, and then the tagged concept would be the other half. So, for example, our smash, okay, would be Seattle would be a strong concept for us, okay? Mm-hmm. So we could say Seattle Fitch. Fitch is a concept we run. It's not in our base concepts, but it's one that we've run very successfully against one high defenses. A lot of people like smash versus cover two, and that's not necessarily why we always run smash, but we'll say that, you know, smash is a two high beater, and we could tag Fitch on the other side, which is a one high beater. You know, so say we're getting a rotation to the strong side. If it's a one high, then, well, we're going to tag Fitch on the back half, and they're going to rotate away from the one high concept, which is what we want in life. So, and then we get a two high defense, and we're just staying on our smash. That is kind of how our system works. So it gives us and our kids this base system to rely on, and that's predictable and comfortable. But at the same time, as we see things, we can throw another thing on it, and it requires no memorization. You know, you say the word Fitch, I mean, everybody knows what Fitch is. You know, we don't run it a ton, but it's one of the auxiliary concepts that we use. And, you know, it's just Seattle. We all know what Seattle is. And then, it's Fitch. So it's Fitch on the backside. You know, so it's very easy for our guys, you know, week to week to adjust to the ebb and flow of what we change. So the past years, our offense has been a lot more changing each week, but our guys have had trouble keeping up because we called it differently. We had a number system, you know, like 52 is a pass, 53 is a pass, 99 is a pass, and, you know, 99 Fitch, well, okay, now I don't remember what 9 is, but I guess Fitch is on the backside, you know, so that stuff like that was harder for our guys. Now, you know, Seattle Fitch or Seattle Hammer, or, you know, so they can hear those things, but it's still comfortable to them, a concept they know and understand, but it's something new on the backside that is going to be effective.
Coach, we talked a little bit about your background in arena ball. How does that influence you in your coaching, and what have you been able to carry over from things that were successful indoors to outdoor football?
And we've had a couple interesting ideas that have been really actually successful for us this spring once we've added them in. You know, the arena is a completely different game, but at the same time, it's the same. It's just, it's very condensed and simplified. We actually run a concept that was really, really good to us this spring, and it's basically, you know, a 3-by-1, the one receiver side. It's a very simple concept. Everybody runs it. Number one's running that a little snag route, and the running back's running a swing. It's a very simple horizontal bracket on the flat defender. Okay, so out of 2-by-2, that formation is the normal snag, or that play is the normal snag concept. Number two runs the corner, number one runs the snag, and the back runs the swing. Out of 3-by-1, we want to keep the concept the same for the guys. Like we said, we want to simplify. So in arena, what we would do is we would run smash, but we'd have a receiver, a single receiver to his side, and use the inside receiver on the other side. In his high motion, get him running, and run a under one, over two, about 10 to 12 yard crosser, basically whatever depth was more open, and whatever angle, and basically run smash that way. So the corner would never see it coming. He'd always see the hitch. He'd have to trigger on it, because that back to that side can't get out to the wall, or the backer on that side can't get out to the wall to defend the hitch, and we just throw that ball over his head every time, and the corner wants to stay back and cover that. Well, then we're throwing that hitch every time. So basically that influenced how we built that concept. I remember throwing that a lot, and I was like, gosh dang, that's a good concept. That guy never sees it coming. And the safety's got to let it go if it's cover three or cover one, which are predominant coverages in arena. And they got to let it go, think the corner's got to take it, because they get a post by number two, and they chase that crosser, then they're leaving the middle of the field wide open. They right. can't do that. You know, so we added that crosser into the inside most receiver on our 3-by-1 snag concept. So that single receiver's running the snag, the back's running the swing, and then you got that under one, over two, 10 to 12 yard crosser coming across, and man, we just kept hitting it. Originally, our guys were just throwing the snag or the swing, and you know they were pretty open like they should be, but I mean this corner was triggering on the snag every time, and just not thinking that a crosser that deep is a possibility. And we finally had to tell our guys, for the love of God, throw the crosser. I'll promise you it's going to be wide open. So we hit it a couple times, and it was really, really good for us, and it really surprised us. I honestly didn't think we'd ever hit it, but we ended up being really good for us. Also, as far as the screen game goes, I haven't been able to do this yet, but I saw us in the Super Bowl in one of the last 2-point conversions. The Patriots had two receivers inside stacked, number two and three, and then they had number one all the way out there motion in, kind of behind them, and that made the corner have to stay outside of the bunch, thinking that he's going to get a now breaking route. You can't stack all three guys over three guys. And they just threw a quick little screen to, I think it was Edelman, and he caught it and just followed his two lead blockers. The corner was out leveraged and walked right into the end zone. And that was something we used to run in arena all the time, but we do it out of high motion. Have that guy, outside guy, running towards the line of scrimmage. About a yard before the line of scrimmage, he'd snap his foot in the ground and running about parallel to the line of scrimmage. Quarterback would immediately take the snap at that point and then throw it laterally to that guy. And he just follow his, whether one receiver blocking or two receivers blocking. And that thing was money. Every third and short, every third and one on the goal line, I mean, it's impossible to stop. So that's something that I was like, no, they got it in before me. Thought I was going to be all creative. but that's definitely something that I'm going to look into adding in the future. It was real good to us. And outdoor, you see a bunch, you have to have a guy outside for the out-breaking route. You have to. And you just can't account for it. So account for having that guy stack those two dudes one way or another, whether he's motioning in, stopping, or motioning in and catching the ball on the run in. You know, so that corner's going to be out leveraged every time. So I thought that was real clever by the Patriots, and hopefully something we can do as well.
Great ideas, Coach. Thanks for sharing those with us. Coach, obviously, as the offensive coordinator, you have the responsibility not just of putting in, you know, a creative offense and doing some neat things, but you have to build that unit. You have to build the chemistry. You build a culture within there. What are some of the things you're doing to build that culture within your offensive unit?
This is going to kind of come in twofold right here, two parts. One is one of the biggest focuses I want to put our whole offense on. It's three things: technique, effort, and discipline. If you look at any championship team, which is something we're trying to be about this year, not just having winning seasons, winning a championship, is every team like that is disciplined. You don't win a conference championship being undisciplined. And you don't win a conference championship with a bunch of guys who don't try hard or try hard some of the time. And you don't win a conference championship without technique. You're not, there's not just a bunch of athletes just running around out there like, oh, they're so athletic, and I can't believe they're, you know, so athletic, but they have technique. They're good football players. You look at Northwest Missouri, they're like that. Look at Alabama. You know, those receivers run good routes. The O-linemen, great technique. You know, there's no one on that field that doesn't have doesn't have all three of those qualities. Same thing with the Patriots. You watch those receivers, you watch the defensive backs, the linebackers, all those guys are technicians on that team. You can tell it's a focus. All three of those things. So those were three things that I wanted to really, really focused on and build that in. It's a conversation I have with the quarterbacks. Our tight end is basically our real leader on offense. And if we're going to run less plays out of more stuff, you know, you're running a curl route as an outside receiver. I mean, that's one of your four or five routes, you know, then you better be exceptional at a curl route. You better know how to run against every defense in every way, every press look. You better be able to win. You know, and the second part of my answer is that we as coaches nowadays, I know this is, I'm going to be called a heretic here, but I just don't believe in the whole coaching in the film room. You know, I can hear coaches right now, you know, saying that's heresy, but I mean, why do we practice? You know, we practice to coach guys up. We practice to practice. Say you go to math class for an hour. Okay, if the teacher never tells you what you're doing wrong in your math problem, except for once after class, and then you have to go to class the next day and do the same math problem, hopefully, right? You don't know. And then figure out you did it right at the end of class, then that wouldn't be a very good math teacher. Now we're saying the same thing for coaches. Well, we'll just play really fast and, you know, coach in the film room. Okay, at 7 a.m. when your kids don't want to be awake, don't want to be at meetings, and, you know, and then you're trying to get maybe hit half the plays of practice, and then say, okay, that's all the coaching you need. See ya. You know, see you tomorrow when you actually coach again. So one thing that I really wanted to focus on, kind of slow down our offense in ways. We really wanted to change up tempos, and that allowed for more coaching. I mean, I'm going to get him in the film room, don't you worry. But I'm on the field to coach. I'm on the field to tell you right then, okay, you got locked down as a receiver coach. You got locked down. This is why. And these are the three things you can do to prevent that. Okay, see ya. All right, now we're running the next play. You know, and same thing with my quarterback coach. Same thing with the O-line coach, who's the head coach. You know, it allows us to actually coach on the field and off the field. You know, and I think that's one thing that football's missing. Football's taking a step away from technique. I know there's been a couple articles about that kind of thing, because they're like, oh, fast, 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 fast. Okay, well, that's great, but I get that. I really do. I really understand where that's coming from, but you know, how can your guys get better when they're only getting coached once at 7 a.m. when they're half asleep? You know, and I think that really helped us a ton, having a smaller playbook, you know, and kind of developing our cultures. We could stop and harp on those things. Now, we're not stopping practice to talk to these guys, but at the same time, you know, going a little slower here and there allows us that time to get coaching in, but still get a lot of reps.
Coach, I'm in agreement with you there, and I share that philosophy. I've always told my coaches, you know, we're going to be fast in practice. We're going to push tempo, but always err on the side of coaching. So if it has to slow down to coach, we slow down to coach. The other thing that I did, you know, I was fortunate to be able to get the use of instant replay systems. I used a couple different ones. I used Coach's Eye 1 year, and I used Insight Replay another year. And having instant replay in practice, you know, standing there and having my script and my iPad together was unbelievable, because, you know, it allowed me to maybe focus my eyes in one area of the field on something I wanted to see was key, but then go right back, you know, 3 seconds later, take a look at my iPad and see what happened somewhere else and coach somebody else up. And I think the other point in making it work like that is you have to have buzzwords. You have to coach in phrases. You have to be able to be very concise with your words, that those words carry meaning to your players, that they understand right away. That, you know, if I, for example, I remember a time I'm watching one side of the line, come back and take a look at the other, and I'm looking at a double team block, and, you know, just yell to the offensive lineman, "Hey, Teddy, high leg." And, you know, he gives me a thumbs up as he's going up to the line to run the next play. Now he understands, like, okay, I wasn't high leg on that play. So I think the technology allows us to do it as well. But I think you make some very valid points there, that you have to err on the side of coaching all the time. That's what this is about.
Absolutely. You know, I've been, like I said, in a bunch of different places. And, you know, some of those places you could stop and coach, others you couldn't. And I'm, you know, my guys are screwing up this one play over and over and over and over, but we're going so fast. I'm like, I mean, I don't have time to talk to you guys right now. I'm over here reading this script and doing this. And then, you know, I guess we'll talk about it in, you know, meetings. And then, I mean, let's be real. You get most of us not at the FBS level only get about an hour to meet, and it's when the kids don't have class. So, you know, you're not getting every kid on every rep. You know, you're having to pick out the base mistakes that most people are doing, and you're missing a lot. Mm-hmm. And so that's your only time to coach. You know, my guys are really suffering for it, and I either had to keep them in meetings for forever or have two meetings, or, you know, just do without, which I'm not going to do, you know. So I think that's an unfortunate thing we've got away from. And I really understand that from, if you're really trying to go fast and that's your culture. But at the same time, okay, look at any championship team. You know, they all have technique, they all have effort, they all have discipline, and those all come from coaching. That comes from talking to your kid, letting them know there's a mistake, you know, and doing it all the time. And discipline's an all-the-time thing. Well, how can it be an all-the-time thing if I only coach in the meetings? I don't say anything during practice.
Yeah, regardless of the tempo you run at, you have to be given that feedback. So I'm in agreement with you there.
Absolutely.
Well, Coach, you've talked about all the hats you have to wear at your level, at your school, and, you know, mentioned being on a phone with, you know, your wife, and she's saying you're addicted to your phone because you're recruiting. So how do you create some balance in your life between all the things you need to do as part of your job and obviously the things that have to be important to you outside of the job?
But, you know, it comes and it goes, I guess. You know, people will talk balance and in coaching, and I don't think it's exactly like with everything else. I think that the balance in coaching comes in spurts. You know, I'll be completely unbalanced through August through November, you know, and then once it's, you know, December through March, I'll be significantly more balanced, you know, and I'll be at work less. You know, once you get done recruiting and you're done with signing day, I mean, what are you doing? You know, you're watching cut-ups during the day, I guess, getting some scheme stuff or some playbook stuff ready for spring, which is in, you know, 2 months. So, I mean, then you're not doing anything. Then I can take the wife, you know, and go back home to Oklahoma City or Tulsa, or, you know, or we can, you know, go out to dinner on a Tuesday night, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, here in the summer, you know, in June, if you're not doing a lot of camps as a staff, you know, there's free nights to go out on dates and that kind of thing. And when you're a coach, you have to understand when it's time to be busy and when it's time to, you know, to not be. and there's definitely time in the season where it's a Thursday night and you're done with, you know, pretty much everything, and you're done with practice and, all right, babe, let's go on a date, you know, or, you know, a Sunday morning or something, you go to church. You know, so I think that you definitely have to make time, and there definitely needs to be an effort during the season, but it's just the nature of it that when you're off, you need to be off. you know. So I think that's how I've created more balance.
Coach, we're going to jump into our two-minute drill and go up-tempo here. And we're going to start with this question. Schematically, what's the toughest defense to face?
Texas A&M Kingsville ran it. It's called the flex. It's like a three down, but then you got a guy who's over the guard by like 2 yards, and he can run laterally with any player. I mean, it's either cover one or cover three, and then they do a bunch of two invert stuff that's almost impossible to pre-snap identify. I mean, it was well done. You know, we had some success against it, but I mean, hats off to them. It was almost impossible to get a read pre-snap on what was going on. It's all post-snap identification. They did a really good job.
What's your favorite goal line play?
Shovel pass. I'm a big fan. Shovel pass or sprint out?
Turf or grass?
Oh, I'm a receiver. Turf all day. I don't want anybody slipping.
Day game or night game?
Depends on where you live. I would say probably day game here.
If you had to run your offense from one formation, what would it be?
11 personnel, 2x2 with a tight end off the ball so I can move them to 3x1 or move a receiver over one side or the other or use them in fly motion. Creates a lot of different problems.
What's a book you'd recommend to our listeners?
Mind Gym. It's by Gary Mack. It's about training your mind and the science of success.
What's your favorite quote?
Obstacles in the pathway of the weak became stepping stones in the pathway of the strong.
It's a good quote. Who's a coach from the past you would like to learn from?
Bill Walsh, no doubt.
How about a coach from the present?
June Jones. He's got an awesome demeanor on the sidelines. I worked with a guy that worked with him and said he was awesome, and I really respect what he did with his offense and turning him around Hawaii.
Nice job on a two-minute drill, Coach. And here's the final question. What's the one thing you'd point to as giving your teams, your units, the winning edge?
Those three things I talked about: technique, effort, and discipline.
Coach, I really appreciate you taking the time today. How can our listeners connect with you?
Oh, feel free to email me. My email is real simple. It's my first and last name at opsu.edu. So it's buddy.blevins, spelled B-L-E-V-I-N-S. At opsu.edu.
Coach, thanks again for the time you spent with us. Good luck to you and Panhandle State as you approach the 2017 season.
Awesome. Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.